The Touchdown City Show is presented by Masters Law Firm, West Virginia's personal injury lawyers, and Parmar Stores. If there's not a Parmar store near you now, there will be one soon. Stone Church Studio in St. Albans, West Virginia. This is the Touchdown City Show.
Welcome into the Touchdown City Show. I'm Anthony Lewis in the Stone Church Studio with Michael Sussman, Derek Bailey, and the GOAT, Avon Coburn, as we conclude the West Virginia football season with a West Virginia victory over Baylor, 34-31. The Mountaineers are now 1-4 in Waco and move to 8-4 on the season. Gentlemen, it's good to see you guys. Before we even start talking football, how was the turkey, bro? How was the food?
Bro, my turkey was phenomenal. I made my turkey, so I couldn't wait to talk about it. I was like, hold on, time out. But you did it anyway. What a great host. Man, I brined this turkey it was perfection. And then only thing that wasn't good about it was I put the cheesecloth on it to keep it moist, and my crust didn't get hard. That was the only part. I need to take that off. But
hey, off-season adjustments.
Off-season.
Get ready for next year.
Christmas is going to be banging.
You ever tried it deep fried?
I did. Yeah, we normally
deep fried. Deep
fried. Yeah, but I didn't want to spend $50 on that oil this year. I was like, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, so I'm done with turkey. If anybody tries to whip turkey or ham out on me on Christmas, I'm leaving.
I don't like the back-to-back turkey celebration. I don't like that. Mm-mm.
So we had steak, too. I made some prime rib.
Okay. We got to do some prime rib or something for Thanksgiving or for Christmas.
He said, I'm done with the turkey.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Don't back-to-back me.
I'm the same way with that.
So outside of that, it was just a good weekend. You know, my nephews here, my family, my entire family. We don't really have an opportunity that often to get together. So
sis came into town.
Yeah, my sister was here. My nephews, you know, the whole deal. So
man, that's should have came over. It's always a good time when you
here
know,
we go.
I was just gonna say the food's always good. Good company. I was gonna talk about her cats. Her cats don't have no fur on them.
Weird ass cats.
She has those skin furless cats.
They're the ugliest damn things I've ever seen. No goodness. Offense to anybody. I mean those cats. They look like Mr. Bigglesworth off of Austin Powers, if anybody's familiar with that. The cats with
the
no
one,
fur.
The one, his name is Stokely. He's the darker one. He came out of his shell this time around. He was climbing all over you and stuff. And it's kind of weird. They feel like little footballs. Warm footballs because of the skin.
And he got them hands too, right?
Yeah, you just pick him up and throw him across the room.
No, I'm talking about wasn't he beating up your mom's dog or something like that?
Oh, yeah. So that's always. So my sister has two of those cats. My mom has these two poodles. No. So it's a consistent battle in the house. Yeah. And, you know, those cats, they almost prey upon those dogs. They'll take higher ground and like, wait for them and then jump on them.
Yeah.
But they're good with their hands. They punch the female dog in the face a few times. She gave a pat, 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 and she was crying.
Cats are evil.
They are. They do not care.
But anyway, let's talk a little football, guys. The Mountaineers conclude the regular season 8-4 with a win over Baylor. And they did it in a fashion to where I didn't think they were going to get to 8-4. It was an odd game because offensively they came out and I thought, oh man, well, here we go. We're rolling, we're running, we're throwing. And then all of a sudden you give up a kickoff return and you go down score. You give up another kickoff return. And I was telling Derek before we hit record, remember in Tyson's punch out, I think it was Mr. Hippo, you could stun him and then you could wear him out. We were Mr. Hippo. They basically just stunned us and wore us out until the last 50 seconds of the game. I hadn't quite seen anything like it. But, you know, anytime I guess you can get a road victory in the Big 12, it's a good day.
Yeah, it definitely was one of those games that you're like, man, how in the world because you expect, I mean, at least I did. I expect us to blow them up. Missed last week, and I'm like, hold on. Hey, guys, we're going to win this game. We're going to win it big.
We already had you down for a W.
And it we I was sweating. I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, and Sus was saying, well, you know, and this is when you wrote what you wrote, I'm like, man, he basically is going to say, yeah, well, you know, he's going to let us down on the road. And that's what I picture you saying, and I'm like.
That's what he said.
Oh, yeah. My goodness.
It's so repetitive, this Neil Brown era. It's almost like you can see the letdowns coming before they happen. and it was just getting to the point to where certain success was being appreciated, maybe over-covered, and you got to take a lot of things into account. But in this game, execution, it got a little bit more loose towards the second half. You had some penalties, and you gave Baylor too many opportunities.
This is a game I feel like that the players won more so than the coaches like assisted. I feel like the players won in spite of the coaching in this game. West Virginia did nothing the entire second half until the final drive. You give up two kickoff returns for touchdowns. Game should have been over at halftime. Let's be honest. The game should have been over at halftime. If you don't give up those two touchdowns, you're probably up 20. Okay, give up one. You're still up 27-7. And Baylor was one of those teams. It looks like they had quit. You're playing a backup quarterback. They look like in the first half they just wanted to get the season over with, and then they kind of hung around, and then the second half became a little bit dicey.
Yeah, all of a sudden they're dancing on the sidelines, having a good time, and then West Virginia seemed like they were in panic mode for literally into the last minute of the game. And like, I sat there and watched the clock tick and the clock tick, and I never felt panicked because you're just within four. You're within four, you know. And even when they took the lead, it was just kind of like, we'll go back down, score, get the ball back, score again, and it'll be over. That clock just kept ticking and ticking. And then it hit they panic
beating
mode.
Us up. They were beating us up, man. They, like, once again, we were supposed to just dominate them, and they just put us in a mindset of, oh, my goodness, here we go again.
Yeah, I mean, like the second half, just what happened to the offense in the second half? It's like Baylor went in, made some nice adjustments, and West Virginia never adjusted to what Baylor was doing. Like, the offense was moving at will in the first half. I didn't have any issue with the offense. Now, the defense, they didn't play in the first half because you give up two kickoff returns.
They must have really liked the concept of throwing deep on them.
Yeah.
Because it felt like they came out six straight times and just chucked it deep. A couple of times, third and short. We threw it 30 yards down the field and couldn't complete it. And then, of course, you know, the next time around, it's third and eight or third and 11. We run an 8-yard route to the tight end, which is typical.
Throw it short.
You know, I was like, what?
Throw it short of the first down marker.
You know, and I think that's where my frustration with this play calling and the Neil Brown stuff is, you know, you need 3 yards or a yard and you throw it 40, and then you need 11 and you throw it 8.
His feel for the game just isn't there. And he looked like he was kind of off kilter mentally yesterday as a play caller. And he said in the press conference, he said, I wasn't comfortable going into halftime. That's your head coach. It's not a whole lot of confidence in the most important part of the game.
And the wild part is in the first half, the offense moved up and down the field. Like, they really moved the ball. Green was running well. Even, I think the play that kind of maybe changed the game, Green ran like a 50-yard run.
Right.
And it got called back for holding. It kind of looked like it felt like it changed the game a little bit. But, I mean, still, the offense had moved the ball all first half long, and that's what he says going into halftime, and you're like.
I think that's my beef with him. Like, how do you – if you have that, again, it all rolls downhill. If you are the leader and you have that energy going into halftime, coming out of halftime, you're going to have the same energy. Like, the players now they have the energy. So I just the guy is, I don't know, we're not talking that, but I feel like this is a game that we should have dominated, just like other games that we should have dominated, like Houston, and we didn't. It's a letdown. It's one of those wins. I swear, when I played, when you win a game that you're supposed to win bigger, and you're like, man, I don't even feel happy about this win.
You feel like it's a loss. Like, you feel like even though you won, you feel like you lost. I understand what you're saying.
Back when they wore leather helmets.
Yeah.
let's get into the offense a little bit. Jaheim White, yesterday, 17 carries, 133 yards. What a performance! I mean, this kid. Has been just, we're at the end now, so it was just like, you saw a little. Mm-hmm. Ooh, they're giving him the touches. You know, Donaldson's hurt, not running right, whatever. And then it was just like, oh, this 22
is balling.
And then all of a sudden, the last three games, went nuts. I mean, 133 yards yesterday. What did you guys think of Jaheim White? That's just rushing.
Yeah, that's just rushing. I mean, he went off. Like, I mean, the way he was running the football, he was running with passion. And here's the thing that I'm going somewhere that I really don't want to go. These guys, they get this money. He's going to get paid next year. They're going to give him some money. He's got to have the same hunger. Like, you got to want to get more money. You can't just, because, I mean, if Donaldson got $200,000 off of really three games last year, this guy played three games and was a whole lot better than him in the three games that he played. And I'm like, he's going to get all this money. You still have to have the same, because if we don't play him, he's gone. I mean, would you agree with that?
I mean, I don't know what his – so it's interesting. I don't know what his mental or his thought process is on the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it comes down to, you know, what's people's situations. Like, you know, you look at some of the basketball guys, they took money, went to big schools, and are playing – sitting on the bench and playing a minute a game. Was it worth the money? I mean, you got paid, but you're not – you don't have an opportunity to go get really paid.
Right.
So – do you take what you can get and come back and continue? You got three more years to really get paid. So I don't know. I don't know what his situation is. But, yeah, I agree with you on the fact that obviously the Country Roads Trust or whoever deals with that will have to accommodate him. And then that's the new game, and that's the interesting thing. So this week is like – evaluation week, right? It's almost like you're playing general manager. Who am I going to keep? Who am I going to let go? And then I guess on the back end in the other office on the other end of the town, they're going, well, they're moving money around, playing money ball.
The chaos is about to start with the transfer portal.
Oh, yeah,
for sure. It's open season starting today, actually. I think they
have an off week.
Well, there's guys already entering, though. I mean, there's already guys announcing. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be complete chaos. And, I mean, the tampering that goes on all year long needs to be dealt with. There's guys going to enter that you probably would think would never enter, and it's going to be because, like, I mean, A&M fired Jimbo Fisher. You know they brought in that number one recruiting class a couple years back.
Oh, they'll pick them
apart.
You
know they're going to pick those kids off left and right if they can. They're going to pay them a ton.
Yeah. Let's talk about Garrett Green, and I keep saying it week after week. Garrett Green doing Pat White things. And, you know,
We got to give him another analogy because he's not comparable to this guy. Like, that is disrespect to me. You keep saying that. Yes, the numbers are
269 yards passing, 103 yards rushing. That's comparable.
No, but in that game, if he had 260 yards, the game was over at halftime. The game was over and the backups were in.
I mean, listen, you know, we're 15 years removed from Pat White. Pat struggled.
He did
at times. I mean, I'm not going to compare Green to Pat White because
that's not what I'm doing.
No, your numbers. I know your numbers,
but you need to. Yeah, you're not doing that.
You're comparing to numbers. I know, and that's fine.
Getting offended because I'm.
I'm not even offended. Like, I'm not offended. The issues that I have with Green are the inconsistency still passing the football. He threw a ball last night downfield that should have been intercepted. It wasn't. And then the crazy
thing. I watched games all across.
No, man. But.
I watched games all day yesterday, and I see it all over the place.
But again, I know, but here's the thing. What's crazy to me is he'll do that, and like in the first half, he threw one at somebody's feet. I don't remember who it was, wide open. And I sent my buddy a text. I said, the next throw he makes will be a dime. And then what's he do? He throws one up the sideline to Clement and hits him. Couldn't have ran it out there and handed it to him any better. He has the capability to do so. What are they working on in practice to improve it? That's what I want to see. We're not seeing the improvement that I want. Like, he needs to improve it.
That's an improvement.
Against Baylor. We didn't see it against Oklahoma. Like, where's the improvement coming from?
I hope that we roll him out more so in the future than we did at times this year. 16-25 is better. The most Pat White-like thing we saw yesterday was just making winning plays on that last drive. That was huge.
Absolutely.
He moves the chains. You know, he's doing Pat White things. This is what Pat did. Here's the only difference. He doesn't have Steve Slayton, Owen Schmidt, and Darius Renaud in a defense that's shutting everybody down the other side of the ball.
That is a big fact right
there. Go back. We need a 20-second right now. Because I know we're not even talking full-court press, but we're going to pause on this one because he said the only thing that he has that Pat White doesn't have was Pat White. I mean, Steve Slayton. He doesn't have Pat White, for one. You cannot compare this guy to him.
I'm not. I'm just saying that. No. They're putting up the same numbers.
He's saying there was more
talent. You're not listening to what I'm saying.
I heard you.
He's saying there was more talent around. There was more talent around Pat White than it's around Garrett Green.
I agree.
And the numbers are comparable, but the players aren't comparable. That's what I'm taking from
Garrett Green does a few things well. Pat White had a separator attribute, which was his speed, and that would terrify defensive coordinators. That's the difference.
Pat houses a few of those runs last night, let's be honest. A few of them.
The one that got called back. That's it.
Yeah, he houses that with
that's
no problem.
That's to the crib. Like,
he leaves those guys.
And I've said this multiple times, but you guys are just taking it to the next level.
I know what you're saying.
I just don't want you to compare him to him. That's why.
I'm just telling you. These are Pat White numbers.
I know what you're saying. They're Pat White numbers.
And you can't argue with that. I mean, you really can't.
I mean, you know, he had 28 touchdowns or something, too, this year. He's played well. I mean, you don't.
Yeah, our exterminating building.
You don't want to. I'm not downgrading him. I think he's playing well. I want to see more improvement because he's showing now he has improved. I want to see more improvement in the passing game.
He's got another year.
I think what would really help him is if they do a lot more of those RPO passes that's right there, as opposed to, you know, going third and 11 and now he has to throw a dig. Yeah. Or he has to throw a 15-yard out, as opposed to, you know, RPO it, throw it to one of your receivers, your $600,000 slot receiver, and let him make some plays, just like Darius Bernard. I don't like when they
try to make him a drop back passer.
I don't think that is his game.
He's too short.
I don't think that's his game at all.
He's just too short. Most short quarterbacks overthrow balls across the middle when they have to do dropbacks.
You can't see.
You watch it all across. And it's the same thing. Same thing with, like, Skylar Howard. You know, Skylar could just throw it up deep and let Sheldon Gibson get it, and he could roll out and throw it. But if they dropped him back five steps, and he had to try to throw over that line, he usually overthrew it. So. Speaking of the offensive line, let's talk about Zach Frazier. Let me ask you guys this. You guys have watched enough WVU football. In modern day, because Sussman's a little young, but modern day WVU, let's go back to 2020. Let's even go back to 95. Is Zach Frazier the best center at West Virginia?
It's close, but I think Dan Moses was better. I got Dan Moses by, it's very close. And there's no shame in that. I think Moses was slightly better, just a little bit better.
To be honest with you, I cannot tell you what the difference is between a good center and if you're making blocks, you're not getting beat, and your name is not getting called, you're pretty good.
Well, here's why I say Moses was slightly better. I feel like Moses, he won the award for best center, but the reason why they ran the ball better than these WVU teams did, the Moses teams did.
I think it was a scheme.
Yeah, well, it could be a scheme thing, but this offensive line should have been, even against the better teams, should have been, in my opinion, should have performed better. There were three preseason all-conference Big 12 linemen on this line, and they got stuffed a couple times in the run game where you didn't think they would.
I believe it's scheme.
The Moses team never got stuffed in the
I believe it's scheme when it comes down to that.
It could be that.
It's because, I mean, not just scheme, it's coaching. I mean, they had Coach Trickett, Rich Trickett.
Yeah.
Is probably the best. Well, I'm not even going to say.
They ran, well, back in those days, they ran that Denver Broncos zone blocking.
Yeah. I mean, it was all zone. But the thing is with that is you have to have the presence to know, okay, when I can leave, when I can't go. And I didn't study them well enough to even grade them.
The thing is.
I'm going to say this.
Either way.
Dan Moses and Zach Frazier are the two best centers we've had in modern day era.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It doesn't matter. Even if you're in the same sentence with Dan Moses, you've done something well.
Yeah,
I'm going to be biased because I'm going to say Zach Dillo because, I mean, we were number two in the country in rushing. We didn't throw the ball very much. But, I mean, I'm just a little biased. I'm just going to be biased because. You know, Dan Moses was there. He was on the bench because Zach Dillon was playing. So,
I mean, that's fair.
I mean, again, he was a young guy, and they all said he had potential. But I'm just off of biasness.
On the
and not,
record.
Just from just going off. And his record was fantastic.
Yeah.
But we had the number two.
A lot of people,
you know, off the rush game in the country.
We talk about it and talk about it and talk about it on this show about how you win the game and the offensive and defensive lines win the game. Like a lot of people don't know. Like there's a, you know, that center's probably out there. He's, you know, he's controlling that entire offensive line. Absolutely. I mean, he's, you know, so I mean that's how important your center is.
Let me tell you how important it was last night. He had the mindset and the frame of mind. He had a season-ending injury, which I still haven't seen what happened, but the way it looked, it was a high ankle sprain, which would have kept him out 4 to 6 weeks probably in a regular season, so he's probably not going to play the bowl. But he had the frame of mind to not go down the field, get off the field so they wouldn't roll off 10 seconds off the clock. So he was thinking ahead.
That's what you want in your center. He's thinking. Yeah. He's thinking out there. That's what you want.
I mean, because you see guys all the time,
and like, it's a selfless act. I mean, he got off the field.
You see running backs all the time. It's like go down, and they run right out of bounds.
Yeah,
I'm like, what are you doing?
I'm gonna play devil's advocate. I mean, it worked out. It worked out perfectly.
Yeah.
Now if he doesn't go down, that new center comes in. They run in, and he snaps the ball over the head or rolls it back to him. Mm-hmm. Now is that?
Then we're all mad at Frazier.
Presence of mind. Why didn't he go down?
We're all mad at Frazier yelling for him to go down.
So, in my opinion, I'm like, why didn't he go down? I seen him go out. I'm like,
he's trying to save time.
Well, yeah, I mean, time's at a premium at that point in the game. And then WVU usually goes seven linemen deep, so I think they've kind of had to switch and swap at various points. I don't know.
Yeah. I'm going to call Garrett Green the MVP of the offense this year.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
He's the MVP of the offense, but Jaheim White only had like six real games, and he had 792 yards. So he would have been on pace for like 1,200, 1,300 yards this year. But given start to finish, I'd agree, Garrett Green.
Green was responsible for about 28, 30 touchdowns. I mean, he's got to be that guy.
Yeah, I think he's the difference maker in the offense this year, where he was able to keep the chains moving, where in the past we've had statues back there.
Yeah.
And couldn't get first downs.
I agree. I think Garrett was a difference maker in our offense, that even a team, because I mean Cocaine Bear, he was super excited about everything, but at the same time, he made plays. And that's what you want out of your quarterback. You don't want him to hurt you, but you do want him to make plays. And I think this offense that they were in put him in positions to make plays. I mean, even though it was a drop back game, which I don't, like we just talked about, I don't think that suits him, but I do feel like he does have a little bit of that in him. But with the drop back game, it allowed them to open up lanes for him to run through, which allowed him to get those chains moving.
He came up big in two big spots too. Against Houston, he throws the touchdown to Clement, and last night he throws the touchdown on the bust to White. I mean, so he, you know, you can say he came up with clutch performances, clutch plays when he need them. Now, I mean, everybody will point to him taking his helmet off at Houston, but whatever. He still made a play to give them the lead late in the game twice,
right,
which is what you're looking for in a quarterback. I mean, that's what you want him to do.
You know, what was interesting was our special teams totally let us down yesterday, and we talked about it. Changed the pace of the game.
Oh.
After that second touchdown, literally the momentum swung to the other side of the field for the rest of the game until the very end.
That's why it should have been over at halftime. If you don't give those up, that game's over at halftime. And that's why what's so frustrating about the win, like Avon said, well, it feels like a loss. That's what's so frustrating, is because if they don't get those two kickoff returns for touchdowns, Baylor probably quits because they were looking to mail it in anyway.
Right.
Their season's over. And you're up probably 27 points at halftime, at least 20. And they probably quit in the second half, and you win the game easily.
So it was interesting to see the people that actually pay attention in games. Like, you know how you go out and watch a game, and most people are watching. But then some people are watching every little aspect, right? So Baylor, I think it was about 4 minutes ago, they throw a pass. And it was ruled a fumble on the field. Then they came back, they ran off time, stopped it, reviewed it, ruled it incomplete. Did you guys notice they didn't put the clock back on?
Yeah, I did.
I thought they did, because it was actually, I thought they took more time off of it after that, because I think when that play happened, I think they said it was like 3:21, and it went down to 3:13, and then I think it came back that it was 3:12. I'm like, did they take more time off? But I
wonder if you can't add time back to the clock because of the ruling on the field. I'd love to hear the rule, the explanation of the rule. Like, the ruling on the field was a fumble.
But no, you're supposed to put the time back on the clock because it goes back. Because if you rule it a fumble, you're going technically to where the fumble was recovered.
Right.
So if you rule it a fumble, the clock continues to run. Well, if you rule it an incomplete pass, it goes back to the previous spot.
So they just missed it.
And, yeah, they just missed it.
And actually, Neil Brown was actually asking for that call. He was
yeah,
like,
I saw him.
He was like, you know, where's the time at? And mm-hmm. I thought they took a second off because I thought it was 3:13 and they took it down to 3:12.
Let's look ahead. We're talking about Neil Brown. Next year's football schedule. West Virginia plays 8 teams that are currently 500 or better. The one team that's 500 is Central Florida. Everybody else has a solidly winning record. Winning the teams they play next year out of conference, Penn State, Pitt, and Albany. Penn State has a winning record, obviously. At home, they play Kansas State, Baylor, Iowa State, and Central Florida. Kansas State, and Iowa State, winning records. On the road, you go to Arizona, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech. Arizona, Oklahoma State, and Texas Tech have winning records. Well, I think Texas Tech will have
Texas 500. Texas Tech 6-6.
They'll be at 500. So, you know, while we sit here and celebrate 8-4, your classes just got harder next year. So, you hope that you learn something, so when you go to class next year, you ain't flunking and going to summer school.
It's funny. I think the league did what they did on purpose just to keep Neil Brown around, because they put him in the worst schedule. I mean, best for us, but worst, you know, in the league as far as schedule wise, giving us all the new guys, And he does what he's supposed to do to a certain extent.
I had a theory on that, because Oklahoma State didn't play Texas either. Oklahoma State played Oklahoma, which is fine. That's their big rival. I feel like the Big 12 thought they needed West Virginia and Oklahoma State to both be good this year, so they did scheduling favors for both of them.
Right.
And it worked out, because Oklahoma State finishes 9-3 and they're going to the Big 12 title game. West Virginia finishes 8-4. Because to me, that's your best two programs after Oklahoma and Texas leave.
Right.
Now, you have a couple new ones coming in, but I still feel like they did that intentionally. And we're talking about, you know, the 8-4 and Coach Brown and next year and everything. Well, I mean, I hate to say it. It's November 26, 2023, and I feel like West Virginia will be 0-1 in 2024 already. It'll be August 31st. I don't think they'll beat Penn State. He hasn't beat a team with a winning record this year. What will make you think it'll change next year? I know they're going to return some key pieces, some key parts.
Over 500, you're saying.
Over 500. Sorry, yeah, over 500. So there's going to be some key pieces returning and everything, but you look at who they've beaten this year and you say, well, no one finished with an above 500 record. Now, they're still the bowl game, so I'll count those if the teams win. But their combined record was 31-53, and I'm not counting Duquesne in that. And you look at next year, Arizona's been rolling people. I don't know if anybody's paid attention to what they've done. You know, Penn State's going to have their quarterback. They're going to return a bunch of good players. Oklahoma State's always tough. Iowa State has played extremely well as the season's gone on. That looks like it's going to be a tough game. The schedule next year is much more difficult, in my opinion, than it was this year. I look for a regress next year.
I do, too. The Oklahoma game this year told us everything you need to know. The coaching staff does not prepare the team. It does not come up with things that are different to take against other elite programs. We run base cover 2 on defense every single play. And when you're playing an average opponent like Baylor, like Cincinnati, you make enough plays to win. But when you make that step up, you have to have the type of staff that's savvy, that's willing to make adjustments, and we just haven't seen it.
And along those lines, I really believe what you said. I never even thought about it in that capacity of how the Big 12 put in place West Virginia and Oklahoma State to be successful. And if you look at the schedule, Oklahoma – Kansas, obviously, they're up there. But Oklahoma, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Oklahoma State, and then Kansas kind of showed up. And Kansas State is always pretty good as well.
Kansas State, Kansas State didn't play Oklahoma, I don't think. So they kind of did them a favor, too. I just feel like because Kansas State, historically, if you go look, they might have been the worst program in college football history until about 1990.
Right.
So, I just feel like the Big 12 did that on like intentionally for West Virginia and Oklahoma State, just hoping, like, think if West Virginia just doesn't give up a Hail Mary to Houston, they finish 9-3.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, nine and three, possibly.
That's a top 25 team.
Yes.
I mean,
well, the voters, even at 8-4, the voters have not even began.
Yeah, because they see it. They know what's up. But if they would have beaten Houston, the voters would have they would have had to because it's they're beating one.
And you got to rank somebody. Yeah. You got to rank somebody. Somebody's got to be in there. Like, I mean, I was not even ranked, I don't think, in the AP or coaches poll, and they're 10-2.
Here's the part of the schedule I look at for next year, and I worry about going to Arizona. Of course, you always worry about playing at Oklahoma State, and then at Texas Tech, we never fare well there. I think we'll handle Cincinnati, but what you got to worry about at home is Kansas and Iowa State. Because did you watch? Well, last night was kind of odd for Iowa State because they played in the snow, but they are getting good.
They had 5 touchdowns of like 65 yards or more last
night.
First
play of the game was a
touchdown. Yes, yes.
Like, so, I mean, and that's. I mean, and, I'm talking to the what is our fund called again? The Country Roads Trust. I mean, we have an alumnus son that is playing extremely well.
He's not coming here.
Easy. Let me do what I need to do here.
Don't tamper on our podcast.
We're not tampering, but I mean, Anthony, if you're listening, I mean, bring him home, and I mean, there will be some conversation.
I don't know. I don't even know if he would start next year.
The crazy
over
thing,
Green,
like,
well, not he would 100% start. Because he still can't throw the ball. He still can't throw the ball consistently
downfield.
I
don't think Brown would start.
Michael picked Baylor in this game, and that's fine. I'm completely, like, it was close. That's how confident people that like watch closely are when West Virginia goes on the road. Any road game next year is going to be a difficult game. Even the one at Pittsburgh, it will be a difficult game because any road game WU plays, they generally don't play well in. Central Florida was maybe the one that was different. But the defense came up with, 4 or 5 turnovers in that game, and that's how they won. Any time they go on the road is going to be a difficult game. And I feel sorry for Arizona. The way Arizona played down the stretch, I just don't see any way West Virginia, if they come out and look like that next year, they're going to bury some teams in the Big 12.
Then we got Prime. Prime is not on our schedule next year.
Next year. It's in 25.
And see, Utah comes in too. Utah, Colorado, Arizona are all three. Like, you know, Colorado's better than they have been. Utah's generally pretty good. Arizona, I don't know what. They just all of a sudden just hit a stretch and they're just on fire. And then Arizona State wasn't very good this year. But like, you just look at these teams that are coming in. Now, it's not Oklahoma and Texas, but like, I just don't see a lot of wins on the road anymore. Like, any time they go on the road, I worry that they're going to lose.
And as it pertains to the whole schedule, we got to execute better against Penn State and take advantage of opportunities, because Drew Aller really didn't do much over the course of the season, and the Nittany Lions were
average.
Against Ohio State and Michigan, they did nothing.
They were 10 and 2. But West Virginia,
we should have been 10-2.
And West Virginia, but the thing that's crazy to me is they were 10-2. West Virginia gave up one of their explosives. I think they had 3 plays of over 50 yards or something like that this year, and West Virginia gave up one of them in the first game. But the thing that got me about it is, like, Allar, however you say his name, he's not like special. He's not spectacular
at all.
But the receivers were running wide open in that game, if you remember, and it was one of the best games he had all year.
Yeah, so their quarterback, same as Penn State. I mean, we're talking Big 12, but Penn State and Ohio State, they're going to be they have the great athletes, but they're just going to be average because they don't have the quarterback to distribute the ball. In my opinion,
it's award season.
Okay,
so now they're going to start naming all Big 12 players and blah blah blah. Is Neil Brown the coach of the year?
No chance.
I mean, with his record, he should be, to be honest with you. Which
you were predicted to finish last in the conference, and you finished fourth.
Give it to Sarkisian.
I'm going to say I agree that Sarkisian should win this, but
he was picked to win due to
West Virginia being picked 14th in the media poll, and they finished
tied for fourth.
I can see where you can argue that Neil Brown should be this. That's not out of the question, and it's not far fetched. I mean, if you expected him to finish last, which none of us did, but that's what was expected. In my opinion, you should reward him with that. Like, he should get that.
To your point, though, about taking classes, if you get an F 1 year and then you study really hard and you get a B minus, do you deserve a scholarship?
Well, here's the deal,
over
though.
Somebody that made an A and the time?
And I get your point there, but even everybody knew what the schedule was and they still picked him last. Everyone picked him to lose against Central Florida.
But not everyone. There wasn't. I don't think there was a single Mountaineer fan that I talked to that said they finished fourth. You're talking about the experts, like in the yeah.
Those are just the journalists, the media that go to the press conferences.
The Big 12 media,
yeah,
picked him last,
and they picked the coach of the year. In my opinion, they should give him coach of the year.
So, I mean, I get your point, but at the same time, the people that picked him last,
they should give him coach of the year.
Have to pick the coach of the year,
yeah, and he should win it. I mean, based on that,
and again, you have a valid point. I mean,
I'm just asking the question.
No, I mean, it wasn't a question. That was a rhetorical question that you gave, and I'm gonna agree with you. Yes, he should 100%. Now. Is that
is
so?
Jordan Leslie the defensive?
Hell no! I don't care what. Turn me up. No. I mean, Neil Brown. I mean, he did something that a lot of people didn't think. I mean, again, I thought he's gonna do well. I didn't think he would win eight games. I'm gonna be honest with you. I didn't think he'd win eight games. I thought he would get to a bowl, but not eight games. And
even with that schedule,
I didn't think. I mean, and a lot of that was personal because I just didn't like the way he
I make this shit personal.
Yeah, it was personal for me. I just didn't like the way he finished the year coaching. You know, like he did last year.
But see, here's the other side of that for me, and this is the angle I'm looking at it. This is the angle which I'm looking. The expectations were so low. So low. You're acting like this is a wonderful season. If they can give him coach of the year, and that's fine. But that's how low the expectations were. Have you ever gone into a season where the expectations were this low? Even Rich Rodriguez's first year when West Virginia finished 3-8, the expectations weren't that low. Like, everybody was disappointed. Well, they were like, there's going to be some transition. And you understood that. But the expectations, people were still excited. There was a buzz. This year going into the football season, I'd talk to people and they were like, I don't even want to talk about football right now. And you never get that. And that's how bad the expectations are, so low that you're looking at it saying, well, we didn't finish dead last and we finished fourth. It was a great year. But then you look at, well, they were 31-53 of the teams we beat, and you lost to Houston, who has fired their coach, by the way. And you look at it and you say, well, maybe it wasn't as good a year as I thought. And that's how I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it from that angle.
You're being negative.
I'm being negative. I'm being negative as hell, and I don't care. I'm going to continue to be negative.
It's not. You're just talking facts. I mean,
I'm just messing with
you. It's along those lines. You're exactly right, because you feel as a fan, you feel good because you win, unless you know the game. You're seeing this like, man, we won eight games this year, but I'm like, we won against. And we struggled against those wins that we got.
Think you could have lost to Baylor. You didn't, but you could have lost to Baylor.
Right.
That puts you at 7-5. And there was another close one in there. Who am I missing? That was like they won
TCU. They blocked two
TCU
field goals.
You could have lost to TCU. That puts you at 6-6, and right where people expect you to be. I mean, that's the thing I'm looking at. I'm looking at it from that angle of, we're not beating anybody. We're not getting better. And even with the quote progress, and I put that lightly because. Sure, the offense runs up and down the field against Baylor and Houston and BYU, and that's great and all, but when you go out and you play against someone that's legit like Oklahoma, and I don't expect West Virginia to beat Oklahoma. However, I also don't expect it to be 59-20. You can't get beat 38-24. I mean, that's where I'm standing.
That's not progress at all.
That's not progress to me.
That's not progress.
So as we judge him moving forward, obviously he's going to be the coach here next year.
And the coach of the year this year.
And the coach of the year. Should West Virginia and West Virginia fans judge Neil Brown on 2023's 8-4 record or his 30-29? Is it 30-29 overall?
It's 30-29 overall, yeah.
Should we judge him on that or on the fact that he's 8-4 this year?
I mean, the fans, the people that don't, and I'm going to say the people that don't understand the game are saying we were 8-4. But the people that understand it, we're like 31-29, bro. That's not good enough.
The thing too that I'm looking at as his tenure overall, if he were 9-3 in one of these previous years, If he were 8-4 in one of these previous years, I don't think anybody would even have a problem with him coming back. But the fact of the matter is he hasn't done anything to justify coming back, in my opinion, because WVU still hasn't beaten anyone worthy of note. Who's the best win of the tenure so far? And I'm not talking like during the season. Army at 9-3 is the best win of the tenure. Sure, he's 2-1 against Virginia Tech, which is fantastic and what you want. He's beat Pitt, which is great, and that's what you want. He's done a few nice things.
1-1 against Pitt, so that's not good
enough. Well, I said he beat Pitt once. The overall body of work doesn't go with what Don Nealon did. It doesn't go with even what Dana Holgorsen did. It doesn't go with what Rich Rodriguez did. Imagine if Nealon got to play 21 more games against Division I AA opponents, FCS opponents now. Five of his 30 wins are FCS opponents. I mean, James Madison, Duquesne, Eastern Kentucky, LIU, Brooklyn, and Towson. Do we really? I mean, to me, he's 25-29, not 30-29.
You evaluate on the overall body of work because, once again, we're sitting here, no conference championship next week. When that game started last night, there was no scenario that could possibly get us in. There's still not a 1,000-plus-yard non-quarterback on the roster. So there wasn't like a mountain that we reached the top of this season. And that's why I think it's just more – it was above average this year. It wasn't average, but not enough progress to act like anything real was accomplished.
It's hard to, but at the end of the day, it's going to be hard to get rid of a guy that just finished 8-4. Here's the thing. Hold on, and I'm going to let you finish. I'm going to let you finish, Taylor. Here's the good thing. The expectation is 8-4 next year.
Oh, for sure. Minimum.
Why? Minimum. But hang on. To me, the expectation for WVU next year should be conference championship.
It should be
Oklahoma and Texas are gone.
Right.
It should be conference champion. Like, West Virginia, in my opinion, outside of Oklahoma, I'll tell you what, where do you rank West Virginia historically in this conference with all the new teams coming in?
I'm just saying the bar is set at 8-4 as a low.
I'm going to say minimum, but that's not even
– that's not
I'm
good with enough for me.
That's the low.
The low for me is – We gotta. This conference is just like the Big East after Miami, Virginia Tech, Pitt left. If we don't win the conference, this is a bust season.
We got to get ranked too. I miss being ranked.
That right there. There's two things right there. This should say West Virginia needs to be in the top 25. Michael's 100% correct. Avon is 100% correct too. They need to win the conference. To me, the bar next year, I don't care what anyone says, it should be 10 wins. This is year 6. If he can't win 10 games, are we saying the ceiling's 8? So the ceiling at WVU is 8?
I'm just saying the basement is 4.
Hang on. The ceiling is 8.
I don't know what the ceiling is.
No, I'm just saying the ceiling is 8 for Coach Brown is what everybody, I guess, is kind of agreeing on right now. It's 8. Okay. Dana won 10. Rich won 11. Nealon won 11. Stewart won 9. He isn't even meeting expectations of the 4 previous coaches. So the expectation to me next year, it's year 6. You better win 10. You better win 10. West Virginia should win 10 games next year, in my opinion, in year 6. What are we waiting on? He's got his players. He's recruited. He's got his coaching staff. The players know the system. He returns a quarterback. He returns a running back. He returns some offensive line. Win some games. It's time. That's it. Plain and simple. Some games.
And just to kind of go back, if we're talking his season, if he doesn't win Coach of the Year next year, because in my mind, it's going to be hard to top what he's done unless he wins the conference and goes – gets into play. It's going to be 12 teams.
If we win a conference, the bar is at 8-4. That's the minimum.
But that's not enough because if you are.
Well, he set the bar by winning 8 this year. If he would have won 9, the minimum would have been 9 next year.
The bar to me was set with Don Nealon because I'm 43 years old and I saw it with my own eyes.
Don didn't win 11 every year.
No, I'm not saying, but that's the thing. We are in year 6 and he hasn't even won 9.
I'm just saying the minimum is 8 because that's where it's at. If they would have beat Houston, the minimum would have been 9.
Don't do that. And don't do that. Don't give him that. So you're giving him a game. It's got to be 9 or 10 minimum.
Had he done something? Because
you're giving him a way out.
I'm not giving him a way out, but I'm just saying with the schedule, that clown ain't going to win eight games next year.
Well, but
that's why I'm like, here's what we're going to do, buddy.
Right.
You got to win eight games to keep your job
next year. We didn't think he was going to win eight this year. What happens if some of these teams end up terrible next year? Some of the coaches leave and they don't play anybody.
That's not his fault, though.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing. I understand. I'm not trying to be – I mean, I'm being hard on Neil Brown. I am. I mean, it's just what it is.
But it's not our fault that Texas Tech's quarterback got hurt.
Right.
I mean, those aren't things that – you know what I mean? Like – I mean, do they play into it as far as the judgment? Yeah. But at the end of the day, it's not our fault some of these teams didn't end up as good as what we thought they were going to be. You are what your schedule – Bill Parcells used to say, I am what my schedule says.
Historically, who do you compare WVU to? Historically, who's a program you would compare WVU to? It doesn't matter. It doesn't even be in the Big 12. Just nationally, anybody you would compare them to.
Virginia Tech.
Okay. Virginia Tech. In a solid Virginia Tech season, I'm not talking here recently because they've been complete trash. In a Frank Beamer year of Virginia Tech, what's their record against West Virginia's schedule this year? I'll wait.
I mean, against that's hard. That's apples and oranges.
10-2. It's 10-2 at worst. That's at the very worst.
I'm just saying, and then I'm going to move on. The bare bones minimum for this guy next year because he's not going to get it done.
9-3. You can't do even if he's not. If you give him that out. Because people are going to say,
they're not
going
to give him that out. Here's the deal, and I'm just going to put it to you real frank. After the we're going to reconvene after the bowl
game.
Because they're going to play an SEC team probably.
Right.
And we're going to talk. Let's talk after that. So everybody needs the whole – actually, we've sat here and wasted 45 minutes on everything because it's really going to come down to the bowl game because they're going to end up playing who? Ole Miss, LSU –
You could get Ole Miss, LSU. I saw
Texas A&M.
I saw North Carolina State, and it could be a Clemson could fall in there. I saw North Carolina State this morning. That would be interesting with Gibby as the defensive coordinator.
I think NC State's going to end up in.
That was in the Pop-Tarts Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know if we're going to pop up that high. I think we're going to get the one right below it, which is going to be an SEC matchup. Even if you don't want to play NC State right now, they're one of the best teams in the country
right now. Yeah,
defensively, offensively, they've got one of the best defensive players in the country, and you don't want Clemson.
Yeah,
so let's reconvene all talk.
If we did get Clemson, they would definitely try to put a 70 burger on.
He's gonna try to shut us out too.
All right, this week's Alumni Hall trivia question of the week for a $25 gift card: 304-305-2TDC. Again, the number 304-305-2832. The question: White, Green, and Donaldson all have over 700 yards rushing. When was the last time West Virginia had three players with over 700 yards rushing? Three players. Again, White, Donaldson, and Green all have over 700 yards. When was the last time West Virginia had three players with 700 yards or more rushing? Again, the number 304-305-2-TDC. All right, we've been blabbing about all this other stuff. I'm going to quickly go through some of these headlines, and we're not even going to get into the national stuff. We'll keep it kind of local. Iowa State over K-State in the snow. Did you guys get to watch this last night?
I did. It was fun to watch. I love snow games.
I hate them.
It was 42-35. Rocco Becht only threw the ball 12 times. But threw for 230 yards.
There were some big plays due to some missed tackles.
And three touchdowns.
It's cold out there. I ain't want to hit nobody.
It just looked cold. Felt good in my house, though.
So with the South Carolina loss, that's opening the doors, apparently, for...
James Madison and Jacksonville State get to go to a bowl game.
They get to go to a bowl game.
Nice.
So the Gamecocks of Jacksonville State... But listen, it was a crime. JMU, that the fact that they would leave these type of teams out,
they're
is just
11-1 with an overtime loss. I mean, how do you say they don't deserve a bowl game, right? Especially when there's 45 of them or something?
And they you know, and the conference championship they can't even get into.
That's stupid, man. I don't get it. We care about the kids.
coming out of Houston this morning, Dana Holgorsen fired at the University of Houston. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs. This is unfortunate but predictable. You have to acknowledge the existence of defense. And just coming into the Big 12 this year, Houston just wasn't ready. Holgorsen is a better offensive coordinator. I hope that we can see him calling plays exclusively again.
The thing is, too, is I read somewhere their recruiting class is ranked like 96th. No help on the way.
He's a lazy recruiter.
They're in big trouble right now.
Remember when he was here, one, he didn't like to put any effort towards a kid like Ryan Switzer.
He was plug and play. He says he can just plug and play, and it don't work that way.
Yeah, you can plug and play with a Tavon Austin and a Geno Smith.
But he never recruited one quarterback out of high school.
Right.
That panned out.
And that's why you can plug and play, because you got guys that can play already.
Speaking of a Dana Holgorsen transfer, former Mountaineer Clint Trickett and Bill Legg, Coach Legg, they were fired at Marshall. He got rid of his entire offensive staff.
They fired the offensive staff this morning. I don't know if that was one of those things where like he was told to do or if he did it on his own. You knew they were going to make some changes, because I think they announced Huff was coming back, but I'm sure it was tentative on you got to make some changes.
I like the way they rule. They wrote it. It was kind of like, after we've got together and talked about it, we've all came to the conclusion that we got to make some changes moving forward and go herd. Yeah. Basically, y'all's ass smart. Is fired.
Yeah,
that's what you do.
Somebody's
got to go.
Crazy thing is, that didn't happen with us. Last year, we kept the whole staff intact.
And Trickett turned down the job, too. Wasn't he offered the OC job in the offseason last year?
He was.
Because his staff was basically supposed to get canned.
Yeah. Right. And then
he gets fired.
Full circle.
But like you said, I make $3.6 million. You're gone.
Yeah. Sorry, buddy.
Sorry, bud. Love you.
Got to go.
Good luck to you.
I'll take you to Fat Patty's on the way out of town. speaking of, so the rumor mill, it was interesting last night. So this is when all the talk starts. So, you know, the Twitterverse, which, whatever. The conversation was Neil Brown's going to Kentucky. Stoops is going to A&M, but Stoops announces that he's staying at Kentucky. But I think he was trying to go. I think there was something on the back end of this thing that went down.
According to the things, and again, it's Twitter. You have no idea what's true and what's not on Twitter. He had accepted that job, but they pulled the old Tennessee with Greg Schiano and at Texas A&M and did not want Mark Stoops. That's how I'm reading this, like what looks like happened. If you'll remember, Tennessee had Greg Schiano hired, and their fan base, I think the A&M fan base blew up and they didn't hire him. Because he had told, I think what I had read is he had told some people at Kentucky he had accepted that job.
Well, we've got Texas and Oklahoma in the Big 12. Well, we have Oklahoma State in the Big 12 title game. Your thoughts on that game this weekend?
I think Texas is going to blow them out. I think they're gearing up to, because again, they're still in the hunt. They're still in the hunt to make this playoffs.
I'd throw a lot of flags on Texas if I was the refs. A lot of them. There'd be a lot of flags on Texas. That's what I'll say. A lot of them. But they're very much in the playoff hunt.
Your band's playing too loud. It's a 15-yarder.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oklahoma State struggled with BYU yesterday. Their defense really got exposed. And Texas playing good football at the right time. 57-7 yesterday. They blew out Texas Tech. I'll take the Longhorns by a couple touchdowns.
I think Texas wins easy.
It's one of those things, man, that I just talking. I mean, I'm going to let you go. But I think Texas rolls, and they should 100% throw a lot of flags to make sure they don't get it. But, you know, just being a fan of the playoffs, and I don't know if we're going here, but we're going to go here. The playoff system, the way I sat down yesterday, and I don't really get time to think about how they structured this. There's no reason why when they laid out the rankings from last week, Ohio State should have been number 2, Michigan should have been number 3. Michigan should have been number 5, Ohio State should have been number 4, Washington should have been number 2, and Florida State should have been number 3. There's no reason. I mean, you look at the strength of schedule by those teams, and it is home cooking to keep Ohio State right there on the cusp. Because they don't have to play a conference champion, or if it was Michigan, they don't have to play a conference champion, but now they're sitting right there. That just bothers me how they set that up.
Well, they used to do that for the SEC all the time.
The Big Ten has a championship game. They play.
I mean, if So Ohio State doesn't have to play.
Yeah, they don't have to play. So right. They can stick them in like they did last year. Absolutely. 11-1. Yeah, that's not happening. They're out.
They're out.
What happens if Michigan loses? Yeah, Michigan? No, not Michigan. Well, no, Michigan will win. But what happens? What happens?
But what if they lose?
If
Georgia loses, yes, is when it gets dicey.
No, not just Georgia. If Washington loses, that's when it gets.
To me, when you're looking at it, like you can have chaos. Here's what I'm looking at. Just with a Georgia loss, you're sitting with 12-1 Georgia, 12-1 Bama. If Texas wins, 12-1. And then if Oregon wins, 12-1, Washington 12-1, Florida State either 13-0, 12-1, Michigan 13-0, 12-1. Who goes?
There's
some chaos coming. If all it takes is Alabama. If Alabama wins, you have chaos because they're going to try to justify putting in Alabama and Georgia, and you can't put Alabama in if Texas wins without.
Right.
You can't do it.
You can't do it. And to me, I go back to say Alabama should be where they are because I mean they played who they played. The Big Ten schools should not have been so high up. They made it so that they found a way to be in there.
They're getting TV ratings too, though.
100%. And that Pac-12 scenario is interesting too because if Oregon wins and you split the two matchups, do you value the championship more than the regular season game?
Let me say this. It's not if Oregon wins.
Oh,
Oregon is going to blow Washington out, in my opinion.
Really?
I think they smash Washington.
I mean, the way Oregon has been playing, the way Washington's been playing, I see the same thing happening.
Washington took a 4th-and-1 reverse from their own 29-yard line yesterday to get in field goal range to beat Washington State. They struggled with Utah. I mean, Oregon's been beating these teams by 30 and 40. I think Oregon might be the second best team or best team in college football right now, right there with Georgia.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I don't see how Washington gets out of here. But then if Alabama beats Georgia,
let's also say that Oregon wins the game 36-33, like they won in the regular season, like Washington won in the regular season, and then you have both of them sitting there
right.
with a loss to each other, and they're both, you know, way up there. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Does it mean more because it's the championship and the second one? Should the committee have to care about that?
I see, that's where I hate these conference championship games. I think they need to go.
I think they have a purpose.
Yeah, they answer some questions.
They answer questions, but at the same time, if they're in a position to like that, or if it's 33-30, that right there, I think, in my opinion, Ohio State is all the way out. Like they 100%, need to be
100%. They're out. To me,
they will find a way.
But to me, they're the only way there's no way for them in because, okay. Even if Alabama wins, Alabama's in ahead of them. Georgia's in ahead of them. Even if Michigan loses, Michigan's still going to be in ahead of them. If Florida State wins, they're in ahead of them. Even if they lose, I think they're in ahead of them.
But you can't say that because Florida's not ranked higher than them right now.
If Texas wins, Texas is in ahead of them. Washington or Oregon, whichever one wins, is in ahead of them. There's no doubt they're taking 12-1 Pac-12 championship over Ohio State. There's no doubt. They have to take that.
I guarantee you next week they have them sitting at number six.
They'll be five. They'll be five.
They should not be number five.
No, they should be like seven. They should be seven or eight.
I don't know if anybody else sat down and really thought about that. I did.
They do it every year. I mean,
I think of chaos all the time. That's what I want.
It's about the scenarios that they want. And you know, if they could, they would stick Michigan, Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia in it.
That's who they want.
If they could, but they can't. Because Florida State's throwing a monkey wrench into this thing.
Right.
Washington's throwing a monkey wrench into this thing.
Oregon's
throwing a monkey wrench into this thing.
Texas.
And here comes Texas sitting over here going, hey, guys, we beat Alabama.
Right.
See, that's why I think, like, what you're saying about the resumes and everything. Okay, now I can see them moving Michigan in there to 2 or 3 with the win over Ohio State. Because they do have the win over Ohio State.
They've only beaten two ranked teams
right.
the entire year.
Yeah, no, I know.
So
I know.
why would they be number two?
But I'm just saying, I said I see them moving them in there at 2 or 3. I can see Georgia still being one, and then, like, you know, I don't know if Florida State with the quarterback, it doesn't matter. That top four right now should be Georgia, Michigan, Washington, Florida State in some order. Right. They're all undefeated. Right. That should be the order.
Right.
Oregon should be five because they have the Washington win. Actually, Texas should be five because right. they have the Bama win.
Yep.
Oregon should be 6 because they have the Washington win. Alabama should be 7 because they beat better teams than Ohio State.
Oregon doesn't have a win over Washington.
You're right. I'm sorry. Excuse me. I messed that up.
Washington over Oregon.
Oregon should probably be below that because they don't have a great win. But at the same time, with the chance to be Pac-12 champion and beat Washington, that moves them in my opinion, because the conference champion matters according to the committee.
Well, there you have it, folks. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show this week. This will be the last show for a while until we figure out when we come back based on bowls and all that stuff. But we're going to reconvene and talk about West Virginia and their move into, see who they play during the bowl season. I'm real curious about it. The only bowl I'm hoping they don't play in is that damn Guaranteed Rate Bowl.
They're out of that bowl. They're not playing in it. That'll be Texas Tech.
Okay. They just can't play in that thing. That thing is terrible. So they're going to either be in Orlando, Memphis, San Antonio.
You know, you said Armed Forces Bowl. If I'm not mistaken, they could match Marshall with West Virginia in that game.
Or Virginia Tech.
That's a way, way, way down the ladder. They're not going to get that below the guaranteed rate. They're going to try. In my opinion, some of these matchups that they're going to come out with, they're going to be for TV. They're going to try to get eyes to watch.
Well, I think bowl season should be that way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like the tie-ins. I think they should just, like, match them up. Let them go.
I'd like to see them more regional. Yeah. You know, like, really, does West Virginia have any business in Phoenix on a Wednesday night at 10 o'clock at night?
Does a Big Ten team outside of Nebraska have any business out there?
You know, it's
why isn't that made for them, the Pac-12?
The Liberty Bowl, the Music City Bowl, somewhere, I mean, somewhere close where people can travel. They should be regionalized so people can travel. All right, anyway, we're going to get out of here, but thank you guys so much for checking it out this season. Again, we will be back, so make sure you hit subscribe so you get the alert for the new show. But for the guys, I'll say we'll see ya.
Visit our new website at touchdowncity.com. The Touchdown City Show is produced by Anthony Lewis in partnership with HD Media, the Charleston Gazette-Mail.